hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 108 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
Hello.
Hello.
You know, it never fails to amuse me is that we always introduce it the same way that you say,
yep,
my name, and then your name, and then I say hello when you say your name. It really makes no sense, and yet
I used to do like with like me and Aiden Morgan, and then you'd say hello, but it just, I don't know why, it just, I think it's because when I tag the episodes, I always tag them as being hosted by you and me. So I always want to introduce this as you and me.
Right. That's right.
I will try to remember for next week to make this so it makes any sort of sense.
Eh. Why stop now when we've got a good thing going?
That is fair. So, let's see. We have some fun stuff this week to jabber on about.
Yes.
Where should we? Well, see. You've only seen the you've now caught up to the first episode of Winona Earp. There have been three. I am all caught up and enjoying the season. But let's talk about the first episode.
Yeah. I was, you know, as always with these shows, and now that I'm in my advanced age, if I don't catch up on a season before the next one starts, I cannot remember anything that happened before. Just there are these characters. Usually my memory is a season behind, which is really weird. So I tend to forget like the previous season. And then as I'm watching, I'm like, oh, right, a whole season's worth of other stuff.
Yeah, that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, this is I don't know, my first just basic impression is I enjoyed the hell out of this opener. They basically, you thought you were gonna get an entire sort of like plot of a season of vampires overrunning the town, and they deal with it largely by the very end of the episode, and I was like, oh, that's clever.
I like the sort of sense of style with it. We're just having fun. Which makes sense since the next two episodes get way darker. It worked as a really good kind of, don't forget that there's light out there.
Right. Yes, I figured as much.
But what did strike me about it, I gotta say, and I know TV budgets and all this, but the stabbing of the vampires looked like there was no force behind any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like something in like the way they did the CG and all this, it was just like, poke! Like, it just always looked so gentle when they were stabbing them.
You know, they did this, it was weird, they always had the same, I remember Buffy the Vampire Slayer always had the same problem, is that usually when they would stab a vampire, it was like they were pricking a balloon with a pin or something. It was,
Right, and I mean, I guess because, like, you know, like a knife, you can have a retractable blade. Mm-hmm. That you don't see because it goes into the hilt, but with a stake, you kind of, I mean, you can, but it's weird.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do, like, a rubber one. I mean, you probably do a rubber one, but even so, it just, yeah, you don't want to show it bending too much. There's not great stake technology out there, I guess.
the state of stake tech is woefully low.
we have to, I mean, look, if we can horribly fake Jeff Bridges looking young in that Tron movie, I will never forgive Uncanny Valley Jeff Bridges, let me tell you.
Oh, God.
I think we can do better with the stakes. I think they have that technology.
I think so. I think they should like actually be able to download an app, a stake app.
Ooh.
And then just send a virtual stake to like a stake gift to a vampire that kills them.
Huh. That's that is one way to do it, I suppose. If we had to have a way to do it that didn't work.
If vampires never showed up in the real world, you can bet that somebody in Silicon Valley would come up with that as a solution.
Oh, I think it'd be even funnier, because, like, you know how they always, they're like, we're going to have, like, new Uber, but it picks up multiple people, and it'll be in a very large vehicle that'll hold, like, 10 or 20 people, and everyone's like, it's called a bus?
You know, we should have a like Amazon, but for like lending books to people for free. It's like we have those are called libraries. They'd be like, I have this new like wood technology that like you put it in this giant pencil shard. Like, those are called stakes. We get it.
Yeah.
Also, why doesn't like Buffy or any like vampire hunters after a while just build a giant pencil sharpener? They can take like a table leg.
Wouldn't that just be way easier
than whittling?
You make a really good point.
Always with the whittling.
Always with the whittling. Well, you know, whittling. I mean, whittling is an old technology, but I mean, it's tried and true. So you don't get it. You know, you can't get. Basically, you're not going to unlikely to get a knife breaking down on you at a crucial moment.
That's true.
Yeah. Whereas giant pencil sharpeners are known to be riddled with basic engineering flaws that make them unreliable.
Well, I'm just thinking just for like your base, just to make up a new batch really quickly.
Oh, okay, yeah. So
you wouldn't carry the thing with you.
Right.
But just, you know, like, I don't know. It's just, I never see any of the shows where they have like a lathe or anything that's just like, we could do this in less than like an hour per steak, considering that we need like 50 of them every day.
You know, now that I think about it, and in all the Buffy watching that I've done, you never really see them discuss the logistics of steak production. It's true.
It was one of those things that, like, that I always laugh at in the Batman movies, because like every Batman movie, there's always some scene where it's like he's sitting there making the batarangs. Like, whenever you have a new Batman, you always do that just because otherwise people are like, what do you need to just go and buy them? But like vampire movies, like they're never like, so this is our steak production facility.
That's true. Like, and they were in a high school, so they could have had like a woodworking shop set. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Just break into the high school at night, use the lathe, you know, like the belt sander.
Yeah. They would have had really nice steaks.
They
only
do it once in 7 years. They just had to do it just once, and they never did.
Just once. Maybe in the Buffy reboot, they'll address this like glaring omission.
I can only hope so.
It's exactly the same as the original, except for the woodworking scene. Sorry. Anyway, speaking of
shows coming back in some way or another. You did hear about the Star Trek thing, yes?
I did. Yeah. All I really know so far is that Patrick Stewart is enthused about it.
Yeah, so apparently there's going to be a new Star Trek show on CBS All Access.
Mm-hmm.
That will star Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard, you know, late in like the next phase of his life, whatever that is. And one of the producers, although not in the writing team, but production team, is Michael Chabon.
Oh, okay.
Which is an interesting choice.
Yes.
So, yeah. That is a thing we will be getting eventually. And no one knows anything other than those facts. That's it. That's all we got.
Yeah, okay. That's a good start. I find that CBS All Access shows tend to be their production histories are always kind of weirdly checkered, like Star Trek Discovery without, like, you know, had different showrunners and then people going, "Oh, this is gonna suck," and all kinds of controversy leading up to it. But I guess it's a Star Trek show, so you're gonna get that.
Well, sure, but I mean, also, I think CBS All Access, it's interesting, because, like, Discovery is popular, but with Disney about to start its own thing, and the DC stuff starting up, I know they announced that they were trying to develop a new Twilight Zone run by Jordan Peele.
Oh.
And I'd now this, okay it feels like they're like, we're going to do original programming that will give you a really good reason to tune in and pay for it.
Hmm.
Yeah, Lord knows what the Disney stuff will do. I mean, they have so many weird deals and problems with their deals. In that, like, you know, the Netflix shows are, like, they have, like, Iron Fist is coming later this year, and apparently so is Daredevil Season 3. Like, it feels like they're, like, wrapping everything up really quick, because once Disney takes over, they're not going to have the shows.
Oh, that's, yeah. Because
those shows are co-owned by Netflix and Disney, so Disney won't be able to do them either.
Hmm.
And they might just do new shows, but I can't imagine they're going to keep doing them with Netflix. Because why would they do that?
I think what they should do is go to like dollar stores and find those like Asian knockoff, you know, toys. So they would have like like Spider-Man is. The weird thing is, I've seen a Spider-Man knockoff. They called him Power Man, but there actually is a Power Man, you know, and it's Luke Cage, etc., etc. So I'm like, so I think some sort of unholy hybrid of Spider-Man and Luke Cage would be what I would want to see 13 episodes of.
Okay.
Even if it's badly paced, if it's a Netflix
right,
show,
sure.
So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you. Yeah. That would be delightful for all the wrong reasons.
Orange is the new Power Man. I don't know. I'm just. I'm
no,
just
stop it. Stop it. Oh Lord. What else is going on? I've been watching 12 Monkeys. I mentioned
yeah.
this last week.
Yeah, you said you were into the second season now.
Yeah, I am now like two or three episodes into the second season.
Okay.
And I feel like they've started to figure out their show in a good way. Like, it's way more compelling now that they've sort of stepped back some.
Hmm.
If that makes sense. Like, the first, a lot of the beginning of the first season was very much, at least to me, it was, I don't know, it wasn't that it was boring so much as it was so involved with, here's the mechanics of this, and look at us doing this thing.
Yeah.
That it forgot to have a show around it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I felt like they didn't really have much except for explaining how the splinter time travel mechanism worked. And
right,
how,
and even then there was one yeah. bit where they kept saying, like, you know, now time will move around you. I'm like, time already does move around? Like, I don't know what you mean. And it's not until the second season that you actually see what they mean.
Yes, yeah.
When they change things and just all the people who had the injections are just like, what happened? So, that's interesting.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
not sure if I like where they're taking some of the characters. Like, but that's the thing. It's like, now they feel like characters, at least. So,
yeah, you know, I find that after a while, I'm not sure if it was a problem with the show, but it just seemed to be a feature of the show, was that they began to change the status quo so often. And sort of characters would suddenly show up with different histories and different, like, you know, people wouldn't be the same character anymore, but they would sort of be in the same plane together. Not airplane, but plane.
Yeah.
That I just thought, what am I watching? Is there any way to make this compelling drama out of just nothing but sort of confusion and overlapping interests? It's a bit of a headache after a while.
Yeah, I mean, I get their kind of free-for-all, you know, method to it, and I kind of am enjoying it now,
mm-hmm.
and I think that if they're running the risk already of, like, losing the thread, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they lose the thread too much, yeah, it'll be a big disservice to the show.
Yeah.
But right now, just that kind of, like, we don't even know what's going to happen. It's like, but it's your show, shut up! I kind of like it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's just something about it that's just sort of... It's vaguely gleeful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, the show itself isn't, of course. It is predominantly grim as hell. But just having that kind of, like, play in the background, you know, it lightens the show for me a little bit.
Right.
Just because, again, like, right now, at least, you have that feeling that, like, they're not quite sure what they're doing, and that's okay, they're having fun.
Since it's been a while since I've seen season two, what is actually going on at this point in the show?
Season two, what's her name? I'm bad with names on the show. Cassie? Was sent to the future, and now she came back as, like, this badass. Basically, she comes back as Cole started the show,
right.
And Cole's kind of turned into her.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Ramsey's done the whole, like, he's lived through all these years, and now he's... back where he started, but he's different. Like, the guy who leads West 7 is very obviously changed because of a few things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not, like, talking about them. Like, they've just kind of hinted at it. So, I mean, it's, you know, they've stopped the first virus outbreak and now it's shifted forward in time because it's still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just starting to figure out, like, the prime people who apparently seem to be, like, lost, like, mentally, like, unhinged in time.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Is what it feels like they're leading toward.
That's actually it, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious, but that's fine. And so, like, again, like, it feels like now they're doing kind of the fringe thing, right? Where it's like the first season was something they had to get through to figure out their show.
Mm-hmm.
And once they figure out kind of what they want the show to be, they're spending at least the early bits of the season refiguring out where everything fits, and then after this they will have a show.
Exactly. It's funny, the show often reminded me, in the way it would sort of like sort of shift throughout, it sort of reminded me of like an RPG video game where at some point you're playing along, and then you do like a good deed, and then the people in the village say, "You have a house here now." And then like you suddenly have a home base and some sort of sense of stability, and then later on, people would raid the village and be burnt out. And it's like you still have a house, but it's just a burnt out husk, and so on and so forth. And that's always how I felt watching 12 Monkeys. It's funny that you're already at that point. I didn't realize that they sort of got onto the primes and
Yeah,
sent,
they're just
you
starting
know.
to get into them, just starting to.
Oh, okay.
I did really
Yeah.
like the bit where Cole explains the whole, well, no, we shouldn't murder these people. And Cassie's like, but that's what you did. And he's like, yeah, but see, it never worked, did it? The only time we've actually changed time is when we saved someone.
Ah, yes.
And I'm like, that's an interesting note. Like, huh. Because again, it goes back to what I wanted the show to deal with, given that they were playing with, was the idea of free will. And it seems like when they actually bring free will into the equation is when, like, when they enable free will to bend time, it actually seems to work, at least this once, versus trying to force it. So, anyway.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it at any rate, because
Yeah, no,
it's
it.
a very strange show. I mean, in some ways, it's just I watch it and I'm like, how did this get made? Because it's just, well, I can see the pitch, but I mean, it's like, but the actual unfurling of the plot is so strange and convoluted. I'm
Well,
just
and
amazed that it stayed on air.
this all brought to mind, though, something that we used to talk about, and we've talked about in the past, and I kind of am changing how I think about it, was things like, very often when there's a new show, and this is still true for me, like I'll try like an episode or two, right? And I'll give like a new show like two or three episodes, but if it doesn't hook me, I'm like, I'm not gonna just wait for them to figure it out or not. But once shows are over, I have less problem going back if I'm like, well, I'll give it like a season or so as I have time. Because I know it's just all there and I don't have to like wait a week and then forget and all this. Like if I'm vaguely interested, I can binge watch a few episodes and kind of make better inroads.
I know. Yeah, and it's funny, and we've talked about this before, the differences between, the old-fashioned way of watching one episode per week as it comes, and then the ability to sit and the binge watch. But it's weird, like, because when Netflix drops a whole season of a show at a time, for example, it almost feels as if you're watching it posthumous. Not you. I say posthumously. I mean, you're not the one who's dead, but in a certain sense, the season is dead. So you're always approaching it from like it's kind of almost always after the fact. It's a strange world we
And
live
again,
in,
there were
Gordon.
still there were some shows like that I absolutely love that, we'll get into one of them in a minute. But to use a different one from it, like The Expanse, I love The Expanse, and I'm going to look forward to being able to binge watch the next season on Amazon. But I also really did like having it weekly because it paced out, like they used the weekly very well. And I'm sure that they'll use the binge format very well, and they are different formats. But like again, to talk about Killjoys, like I would be sad if we had Killjoys all in one lump, because then I would just spend a day watching it and then have no more Killjoys.
They'll be like, oh, this is
Part of the
all the
fun of
time
the
I get to
show is
spend.
that wait and guessing and playing with it.
Yes. Exactly. So, hey,
So
Killjoys.
Killjoys.
Yay!
Woo!
Good segue. One of our
Yeah,
better
so.
segues.
So we've hit episode 3 already.
And things are not looking good for our friend Johnny.
Or anyone else.
Or anyone else. Everything looks like it's going to shit, or some such. I think it's funny. This episode, oddly enough, to me, felt in some ways, slower than the first two, or at least less burdened with new information. So it was sort of more able to sort of feel like just like an hour of television rather than like, you know, like frantic info dumping and so on. Although Killjoys does that very, very well.
They do it very well, but I think you're right. Like, there is that level where it felt like one of those episodes that the show does at least once a season, where it feels kind of slow, and like, but there's things that happened that will be major later.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
so
I don't know if the character of the warden will pop up ever again, or whether that's just forgotten.
Yeah, but I don't think he will.
No.
Or again, maybe he will. I have a feeling the idea of regrowing organs will come back. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah, that's at least as part of, if not as part of just General Killjoy's lore, but yeah, there might be a payoff to that. And hey, remember when last time we talked about Killjoys, I thought I sort of hazarded a guess that the end of the season would involve Dutch having to make a choice between saving Johnny or letting the lady out of the green, and that would be the climax of the season. I think it already happened.
It very well might have. I do like that Johnny tosses that gun into the pool, and Dutch comes out with that gun.
Yes.
But now, should we discuss the pool itself? Because I have a feeling I know what... I have a guess towards some of that.
Oh, okay.
Because she comes out of the pool and it seems to just solidify?
Yes.
Okay. A, that means you can't get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
Or out of it, right?
Right.
But also, you can't poison that pool now.
Okay.
So, that's an interesting problem.
Right. So, it means that one of the ways of actually dealing, if the green solidifies, then you... Your primary way of dealing with the Hullens is, and possibly the lady is you know, cut
right.
off.
It might be gone. I mean, I don't know, but that's what my gut says.
Yeah, and you absolutely know it's significant because they even say, "Hey, the pool crystallized. What does that mean?"
So, you know. Well, yeah, it's a brand new thing. Also, I've been enjoying the transition from awkward turtle Zeph to what I am going to call Science Dutch.
Science Dutch. Yeah. Yeah, they seem to be giving more and more character to Zeph with each episode.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. And exactly, turning her, and as you say, turning her from kind of a nerd to kind of a slightly Aspergerian badass,
Right. I mean, she's still very much, you know, herself, but she's taken those lessons from Dutch and who she wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And just, she's not doubting herself as much. She's not, you know, I actually mentioned this to Loretta. We mentioned, like, it's, you know, she's the same character. She's just not doubting herself anymore.
Right.
And so she comes off as way more badass. Because there's no sort of, like, awkward, well, what if this? She's like, no, this is what we're doing. And it's great.
It is great. Yes.
Also, the swearing in of Pri and Pip.
Yeah, that had to be one of the funniest bits of the whole episode.
Yeah. Like, take no sides. That's kind of my thing. Take no bribes. That's my thing. Oh yeah, but the ward's important.
That's right. That's yeah. That was great. And the
moment.
And I love Zeph, like reciting the oath as well. And he's like, do you want to do this too? always funny. It's they're like this, the whole comic relief backup part, but everybody's kind of comic relief at the same time in that show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Patrick Garrow, who plays Torin,
mm-hmm.
I had a weird moment because I watched this last Killjoys episode and then went back to go watch some more 12 Monkeys.
Oh.
And he shows up as Cole's father.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And I had that weird, you know, like when you're watching, it's like for a while there when I was rewatching some Killjoys and also rewatching Warehouse 13.
Mm-hmm.
that I'm just like, okay, there's Aaron Ashmore, like, here he is this way, and here he is this way. It just, it always throws you for that weird loop.
Yes. I know precisely what you mean. And it's like, you know, television made in Canada, we only have a dozen actors here, so.
Oh, well, like England.
Like, it's exactly like the UK. I just love watching all these shows where you're like, hey, look, it's Anna Friel. Oh, there's Anna Friel. Oh, Anna Friel. Oh, look, it's Matt Smith or, you know, whoever else. That's always kind of enjoyable. Like, the States has this deep pool of talent, even though a lot of the actors there are pretty crap. But anyway,
I mean, part of it is now, of course, that the U.S. even shoots so much TV up in Vancouver and Toronto.
I know.
That you use a lot of Canadian actors.
Yeah.
And of course, the BBC only produces so much TV, so you don't have the same pool. But I do think it's funny that you can tell when a TV actor, whether or not it's they've moved to movies in the U.S. or even England, wherever, but when they've hit a certain echelon in British TV because they stop showing up on 14 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, they're just like, I no longer need to do every single show that says, hey, do you have a minute?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I find really funny about shows shot, like U.S. shows shot in Canada, is by looking at the background, like, Canadian actors, you know roughly where it was shot. You know if it was shot in Toronto or whether it was shot in Vancouver based on who's showing up. Because, as soon as I was watching Condor, I saw Melissa O'Neill and Alden Adair, and I was like, oh, they shot this one in Toronto. it was just immediately obvious.
Okay, well, because I'm wondering, because iZombie used Melissa O'Neill, and I didn't think they were in Toronto.
No, they're in Vancouver. But, yeah, I mean, these people can travel around a bit, but...
Well, no, I know, it's just like, she wasn't in the show for that long, which is why I was like, I figured that she was Vancouver-based. It was just such an easy little pickup for a couple episodes.
Right. Yeah, no, I noticed that as well. But, you know, so... You know, don't listen to what I say. I mean...
Yeah. No, I just think it's funny, you know. I mean, obviously, yes, people can travel. So anyway, you saw a movie that I want to see.
Yeah, and the movie is Sorry to Bother You, by musician Boots Riley, also now obviously a writer director Boots Riley.
Yes.
It's funny because there are if you look at reviews or any sort of news about Sorry to Bother You. They really only tell you about probably the first half of the movie, or maybe the first 20 minutes
of the movie.
I believe
it's on purpose, yeah.
It is definitely on purpose, because it goes into, like even weirder places. But the basic
nice.
Premise is great. It's set in this sort of a dystopian Oakland, which I think is really saying something.
I was going to say,
think Oakland,
I mean,
California.
All jokes aside, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
But it's, you know, it's a world in which the most popular TV show is called I Got the Shit Kicked Out of Me, where people just watch other people getting, like, beaten the hell out of them on camera. And, you know, and sort of later on in the film, somebody, a protester does something, and then immediately, Black Mirror style, is offered a television show. And, like, all of a sudden the protest becomes a television game show, and it's, you know, and it's...
Right.
And it's not even part of the main story. It's just, like, it's just part of the background noise of Sorry to Bother You's dystopian, instant co-optation, media-guzzling world. Of course, so in this, of course, we've got Lakeith Stanfield as Cash Green, who gets a job at Regalview Telemarketing, and he's unsuccessful, so he's told to use his white voice, which is basically David Cross dubbed over Lakeith Stanfield, and it is fucking hilarious.
Nice.
I think Patton Oswalt plays one of the voices, somebody else's voice as well. But the funny thing is that when he's advised to use his white voice by Danny Glover, of all people, it's like, Don't make your voice nasally, and don't make your voice sound like the white people you're talking to. He said, you have to make the white voice that they want to sound like as well. So it's essentially the white voice is nobody at all, right? It's another performance because, you know, Riley is well attuned to the fact that, you know, whiteness is as much a performance as blackness. And at one point, Cash is actually sort of asked to rap for the benefit of some rich people, and he can't rap at all. You know, he's sort of standing there going, "Hey, my name's Cash, I'm from Oakland. Anybody got something to smoke gangsta style?" You know, and it's just this horrible thing.
Right.
And then, like, out of desperation, he just starts, like, chanting N-word shit, although he's not saying N-word. And the whole white audience begins to bounce along, you know, just because, of course, and sing it too, because you realize what the end game of black entertainment in America is: giving white people the permission to say and act and
yeah.
like to put on blackness and you know, and do racist mimicry. And it is so fucking damning. It's so scathing. And it just, and you just don't, and you kind of see it coming, but you don't. And it just, and it's hilarious and it's hard hitting at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I have not enough good things to say about Sorry to Bother You. Yeah. I mean, it's not a perfect film. It's very much like a guy who's making his first film and he's just got a million ideas and he's throwing everything he can at the screen. And some of it. And some of it is great. Some of it is like, oh yeah, it's good, you know. But still, and it reminds me a lot of the punk sort of the punk social satire things that I grew up watching in the 80s. So it's very much an 80s film in that way. Very, very sort of satirical, sort of punky, heavily left wing. Like they basically, like it's a pro. It's this film is so pro union. It's crazy to see. And very kind of refreshing.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't want to go on too much about it, or I'll start like giving away like salient plot details.
That's cool. Yeah. No, it definitely sounds like fun though.
Yeah, it is. I think it's. I mean, it's. I don't want to say, hey, it's an important film, but I think it is kind of important.
Sure.
I don't know if you're going to be a better person when you walk out, but it's certainly. Yeah.
I mean, no.
No, I mean, I'm immune.
That's a closed
to...
door, sir.
That's right. That's right. There's no improving this. But it is. I mean, it is
the
a
other
film
way.
That...
Just like you know, I'm immune to self-reflection and smarts.
but it will actually sort of give. I mean, it actually just talks about things. It's for an American film in at this day and age. It just talks about things and. Deals with characters in ways that you just thought were kind of lost. So
nice.
Yeah. So go see. It's my pick of the week.
Cool. So what else? Now I know that I had mentioned that I was going to watch Ready Player One. Now that it was on Netflix. I have not. I might. I don't know. I can't bring myself to do it.
You know, I think you should just like sit down, just open a bottle of whiskey, and just steel yourself, and get through it.
Yeah, but then I won't remember enough of it to actually talk about it later. So.
Yeah, it's. I guess you want to have a clear head.
Right.
Hey, Hannah John Kamen is in it. If that sweetens the.
I know. It helps.
Yeah.
It's like we were like a Walton Goggins away from me, like going like yes.
I can picture Walton Goggins being in that film too. That would have actually helped a lot more. So much of that film.
I do love me some Walton Goggins.
Yeah. So much of that film's so stupid though. It's just so outrageously stupid in so many parts.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let alone.
This is most
like, yeah, I mean, I'm not even talking about, like, you know, using the Iron Giant to go around kicking ass and giving a Terminator-style thumbs up.
Right.
Just, like, plot things and information delivered in ways that are just like, oh, fucking come on. Like, you just want to throw shit at the screen.
Well, I might eventually give in if I can force myself to. But yeah, no, past that, I don't know what else has been going on.
Don't ask me. I live in Canada. They don't tell me anything.
Nothing goes on over there.
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Well, the exhibition started here in the city. So there's like a, you know, Ferris wheel and a bunch of like carnival rides and stuff, which I happily never go to every year.
People enjoying themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like to see it running around.
I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. But having, you know, gorging themselves on cotton candy and little mini donuts.
Oh, how dare they?
How dare they? How dare the masses have a good time?
The hell do they think they're doing frying bread?
While you were frying bread, I was studying the blade.
I am waiting for the day when Wesley Snipes tweets that.
Oh, shit, somebody on Twitter I follow said, I know everybody's happy about this new Star Trek with Picard in it, but I'm going to ruin it. You know Wesley's going to be in this one. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
That's fine.
Yeah, I know.
He's older. He's, you know, whatever. Maybe it'll just be like Picard, like all his friends are dead. He's just like on like an empty spaceship, like husk, just wandering around doing Shakespeare.
I'd watch that.
I mean, personally, I think it really should be that Picard in his later life has turned to crime, and his new best friend, played by Ian McKellen, just go off and just have like space heists.
Oh my god.
Right?
I would absolutely love to see that.
I mean, it's not really a Star Trek show at that point, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah, our mission, you know, to go on to explore new worlds, to find new civilizations, and rip them off!
Oh, Jesus. Yep, I'm on board with that show.
Not your grandfather's Star Trek. Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun!
Oh. Yeah, no, I would love...
We might end up cutting out a little early today, because we're both insane.
Oh, I know, just minutes before the podcast started, my partner of 17 years left to go to Edmonton for a few days to do some work and to hang out with some friends. So suddenly it's like I'm in this empty place, except for some lazy cats. And
I know the feeling.
And when that happens, I'm just like, do 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 do, what do I do? And then my brain sort of starts to wander. And, yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm, you know, chasing deadlines with this novel and trying to refocus.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I have deadlines as well. Shit, I should probably get on those. Now that I've got a few days to myself, I could actually do some work.
See,
I
won't, but you should.
I know, but I've just found myself a purpose, which is meaning to do work.
I can mean to do work with the best of them.
I'm just going to go update my LinkedIn profile right now. Meaning to do work since 1971.
Nice. But yeah, we can't just cut out early because we're just rambling now. And try this again next week, and maybe by then I'll watch Ready Player One at the very least.
Oh yeah,
and we'll be very sad.
Yeah, I think actually if you could do this, because there are some interesting similarities, go watch Sorry to Bother You and watch Ready Player One, because weirdly enough they have some remarkably similar plot points.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to get to see Sorry to Bother You. This week is kind of packed for me after work.
Oh, okay.
But we'll see what happens. I will definitely try.
Yeah, yeah. I think you would enjoy Sorry to Bother You in the same way that you're probably not going to enjoy Ready Player One.
That is fair.
No one said life was fair.
Yeah. But anyway, so for now, we'll get some music going?
Yeah, let's get some music going.
All right. Woo!
Boop, boop, boop.